Well, hello out there, boys and girls in radio and virtual listening land. Adam here on the Talking Place, WWGH Radio, on a nice crisp winter day here in Mid-Ohio. And it's the Adam the Computer Guy radio extravaganza, super duper program where your ears and brain cells will thank you profusely. And as we do about once a month, if we feel like providing great radio, which we almost always do, I present to you naturalist extraordinaire, Mr. James Anderson, the official naturalist of this station and of Marion, and as far as I'm concerned, the entire stinking universe. So, James, it's winter, even though we've had, you know, sometimes spring weather and then back to winter weather in the course of 24 hours, but if you're listening today and there's a snowflake or two, or the thermometer reads in the 20s, then I guess it is winter according to Mr. Calendar. But as we've talked about before, James, even though we're in the cold weather portion of our beloved four-season climate, you don't hibernate. The Park District, which you are heavily involved in Marion and environs, still functions, still has programs, and you stay a pretty busy man, right?
Yes, oh, absolutely. And we do also a lot of programs in schools and nursing homes and places like that.
Okay. And, of course, if you're inside, doesn't matter if you have half an inch of half a foot or half an inch of snow on the ground. It's nice and toasty warm as long as the furnace and other gadgetry decide to cooperate. But it seems, James, it's been a bit of a mild winter. We did have the minus 5 degrees just before Christmas, just to keep things interesting. But it didn't last very long. And then we had a almost preview of summer. And, you know, kind of depends exactly what day people are listening to this program, because it might be in the 40s, might be in the 20s. But we're not seeing massive amounts of snow or ice coming down. So a bit of a mild winter. Does that kind of make you excited for an early spring and some early buds on the trees and early birds and a lot of interest in our natural ecosystem?
Oh, yeah. I always get excited to once the weather starts warming up, you have everything starts coming back into life. We got our spring migrate birds coming in. Reptile amphibians are coming out of hibernation and wildflowers are starting to bloom. So spring is my favorite season.
I guess it's safe to assume that a naturalist, especially one in a four-season climate. I mean, if you're in Honolulu, might be a little different, or even in San Diego, probably not quite as exciting because it's almost like the same spiel every day. But with this four-season climate, and sometimes four seasons in the course of 1 week, as we've seen bit of this winter, and sometimes happens, keep shining your toes. And every day you wake up, it could be something new to discover. You might look outside your window and see a bird flying south or a bird flying north, or maybe see some flowers on those trees that'll become a fruit at some point. So I imagine with some of the sneak previews of maybe an early spring, and we're getting into the second half of winter here, you're kind of gearing up for an exciting few months with the Park District.
Oh, absolutely. And then once summer rolls around, then that's our busiest season of the year.
Now, and again, even though it's currently winter, even if we get, you know, the 5 and 10 degrees again, which I'm sure we will, you don't hibernate. The programs still go on. I would say the biggest obstacle wouldn't really be the temperature. It would be wind and ice, you know, and more than a couple inches of snow. That would prevent hikes from taking place, or people really wanted to get outside. But I mean, if it's 20 degrees, the winds are light and it's sunny and there's little snow on the ground, just wear a coat and a hat and you're fine. I mean,
oh yeah, absolutely.
And you can kind of see exactly what the differences in the flora and fauna are between this time of the year and when it's 90 degrees and humid outside. So yep. James, remind our listeners, you know, we don't really expect everybody to listen to every single program in the station, even though I'm not quite sure why somebody wouldn't. But for those who may not have heard your dulcet tones much in the past, remind our listeners exactly, you know, who you are, your bit of your background and what your role is with our park district.
Yeah, so I'm the park naturalist for the Marion County Park District. So I'm in charge of the county parks in our wonderful county. So I'm in charge of Marion Tallgrass Trail, Terradyce, Greenspur, Myers Woods, and the Caledonia Nature Preserve. A lot of people don't realize there are about 7-8 parks departments in Marion County. If you count us, city, each village, and Big Island Wildlife Area, and a few here and there in between. But our goal is to promote outdoor recreation, such as hiking, biking, fishing, canoeing, kayaking, or just wildlife watching in general, and just get people out to all the natural areas in our great county. But a little bit of my background, I went to a hiking college in Rio Grande. That's where I got my wildlife degree. So I have an associate's in wildlife management and a bachelor's degree in wildlife fishery conservation management. So it's kind of funny. My degree's more focused about managing wildlife, like wildlife areas, but you still can tie in naturalist things with it. But I've been a naturalist for 13 years, 12 years. But been with the park district for 7 years. So that's kind of my background.
Now, not unexpectedly, you've been interested in our natural wildlife since you were old enough to know what it was and kind of made a career into that. You know, a lot of kids that grow up, I want to be a fireman, I want to be president, or, you know, I want to be a park ranger, I want to work with the animals and the plants. And you had a chance to kind of pursue that dream. I mean, getting an education in it, learning more about the specific, I guess, needs of our flora and fauna in this part of the country. You know, maybe even teaching your own professors a few things about your own experiences, and now getting a chance to disseminate that information to the curiosity-seeking adults and children in this area. And I think if people appreciate the plants and animals that we share this great area with, they will appreciate where they live a lot more. I guess that kind of sums up, if there was ever a reason to wonder, why would somebody partake in one of these programs you offer? And they're pretty much, they're all free. There's the answer. Yeah. How could you not expect to acquire more pride in this great area if you do learn about the flora and fauna? And as you've mentioned, you've learned from your interns, from the people that you take on tours, and just keeping your eyes and ears open. And that's
absolutely.
That's a good thing about working in the wildlife business. As I mentioned, James, you have many programs that you put on as part of your park district duties. Even though it's January, doesn't matter. You know, wear a hat, wear a coat. And get out and explore wildlife. In many ways, it's a bit more interesting in the winter than it might be in the spring or summer. For one thing, the weather is a bit more variable this time of the year. I mean, the summer is just hot and humid. I mean, it might not be quite as hot and humid one day as the other, but, you know, it's not going to get below 50 degrees in July or August. This time of the year, we've had 60s, and we've had below zero. So you never quite know what you're going to see.
It's been an interesting winter.
And with the wild animals, I mean, polar bears, we don't have them here. We do have the darker bears from your original neighborhood in southeastern Ohio. But, you know, polar bears, they live in the polar climates, and they have their own winter coat built in. And we've all seen deer kind of crossing the road and hopefully not hitting our vehicle. So we don't mind different types of weather. And, you know, it's rare you go outside somewhere driving a country road, you don't see a possum or a squirrel crossing the road or in other ways being visible as you traverse the great land that we call home here in the central and mid-Ohio area. Unfortunately, the Leave It to Beaver event for this past Wednesday, the 25th, that was canceled, I presume, because of the weather. We've had some slushy, icy conditions, and that's not the greatest for hiking. Temperature is fine, but looks like a gigantic snow cone outside. But earlier in the month, on the 18th, you had Observing for Bald Eagle. On a previous show, James, we talked about the fact that, unbeknownst to me, bald eagles are no longer considered endangered. I mean, they're not omnipresent, like pigeons, I mean, or squirrels, but I mean, they're around, they're not considered endangered anymore, and that's great because they are gorgeous animals, and of course, they're our national bird. So during this Observing for Bald Eagle extravaganza, I know I say that a lot, but I think when you're observing our national bird and doing it in your own backyard, that's about as extravagant as you're going to get. I mean, you talk about a great way to learn about our country and about our area and appreciate it better. That was at the trailhead of the Tallgrass Trail. How did that go?
Oh, went pretty well. We had two people showed up. So we started at the trailhead, and then we walked to the Foundation Lake, and we saw a juvenile bald eagle that flew by. So that was pretty exciting. During this time of year, especially around our lake, that's a really good chance to see them, because especially at Big Island and Kildare Plains Wildlife Area, if those wetlands start to freeze up, a lot of the ducks start trying to find bodies of water. Well, then our lake typically stays pretty open, doesn't get a ton of ice. So if you've got ducks go over there, then of course you got predators like bald eagles. And sometimes we've had several, up to a dozen or more bald eagles all around the lake looking for a delicious duck to hunt and eat. So yeah, it's always fun during this winter time, that even though it looks very quiet, there's still things going on out in nature. Right now, the trumpeter swans are pretty active out at the Foundation Lake at Tallgrass Trail. So still a lot of sea.
So the bald eagles are similar to humans. I love duck, and duck's very healthy. It's kind of expensive, too. I'm not sure if they have to, you know, stick a dollar bill between their feathers and pay to eat the duck, or they just eat the ducks for free. But when I go to a restaurant and have duck, it's an expensive item, but it's worth every nickel because it does really taste good, and it's quite healthy. Yeah. So any ducks out there, if you see a bald eagle, you know, pun intended, duck, get out of the way. So bald eagles do, they like duck then?
Yeah, I mean, they'll eat ducks, they'll eat fish, mammals, small mammals, and a lot of people don't realize they do eat carrion. So they do eat dead things. So they are like vultures. That's what makes them different, actually, from ospreys. Ospreys are not here in the wintertime in Ohio. They're actually in Mexico right now. They're smart in the warmer climate. But they come up here during the summer season. But they only eat fish. They don't eat other types of things. So ospreys are a little bit smaller, too, than bald eagles. And, yes, you can see them out at Foundation Lake, the very tall red and white communication tower. There's typically an osprey that nests clear on the very, very top. They did that about 5 years ago, and they've been building their nests. And they have been successful raising their young. So I'm really excited that we have osprey really close to the Marion Tallgrass Trail.
So the bald eagles eat small mammals, so larger mammals like humans don't have to worry about it.
No.
But they do eat smaller mammals. Yeah. I think we talked earlier, James, bald eagles, they aren't quite as gentle as like a deer, you know, or, well, some dogs. Some dogs are mean, but, you know, most dogs are cats, deer. You don't really want to get too close to them. They won't eat you, but they might peck at you or bite or otherwise, or go to the bathroom on you, I guess. But they're more just to be admired from afar. Not unlike some snakes. I mean, they don't. Yeah. They're basically shy. They're not gonna be aggressive and come after you. But don't get too close to them. Would that kind of be the rule of thumb?
Yeah, and especially during nesting season. And I mean, this is general rule of thumb for every animal, but. They can be very territorial during the nesting season. So if you do get close to their nest, sometimes I have heard bald eagles kind of not really attacking people, but they do kind of do what's called dive bombing. So they'll act like they're hurting you, but they're really not. They're just trying to intimidate you, say, hey, stay away. You know, this is my territory. So they can get a little aggressive on that way, but there have been, you know, some reports of some people getting attacked by eagles, but usually that's because of the person's fault, not much of the bald eagle's fault.
So a lot like the rattlesnake, the rattle is for warning people. They don't really want to attack you, but just admire them, take their photo, and then move.
Yeah, absolutely.
Respect their turf. Do people hunt and eat bald eagles? I never ask you that. I mean, they're a larger bird.
So legally we can't, not just because they're our national bird. They are still protected under two laws. They are protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918 and the Eagle Act of 1940. The only group of people who are still legally allowed to hunt bald eagles are Native Americans. Certain tribes use the bald eagle feathers for ceremonial purposes. So as long as they are if their tribe is federally recognized by the government, they can obtain a permit and to use a bald eagle or to hunt a bald eagle for feathers, because it would affect the First Amendment for freedom of religion and all that. So other than that, no one else is legally allowed to hunt bald eagles.
That is kind of fascinating. We haven't really talked about that. I would think, as a larger bird, they would have that poultry kind of a taste to them. You know, maybe not much unlike a duck. Maybe a little more.
I would say they would probably have a lot of dark meat.
Yeah, a little more gamey.
Yeah. But
never had bald eagle, as far as I know. But yeah,
I bet it might taste like chicken.
Yeah, I just didn't quite know what the deal was with that. So yeah, admire them from afar. Don't hunt them without that special permit. And just appreciate their beauty and that they've come back. They are no longer considered an endangered species, and we should all pat ourselves in the back for that, because they're the national bird.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy that they were almost considered extinct. I think we've mentioned on your program before, in 1975, there was only 4 pairs of bald eagles in the state of Ohio, mainly from a habitat destruction and also to a nasty chemical called DDT, which was a lovely pesticide that did its job. It killed a lot of pest species, insects, mosquitoes, to help control malaria. But what happened was when the insect was sprayed by the DDT, well, the little critters were eating the insects. Well, and little bigger animals were eating the smaller animals. Well, each time you went up the food chain, that DDT kept getting stronger and stronger and stronger. So it kept getting more concentrated. So there was actually more concentration of DDT in the bald eagles than the insects that were directly impacted. It's called biomagnification. And say we were allowed to eat bald eagles, we'll just pretend that we were allowed to, we would have more DDT in our bodies than, again, the insects that were directly impacted by the pesticide. So what happened was, with birds, it destroyed the calcium layer on the egg. So when mom was sitting on them, they made that eggshell very, very thin. So when mom and dad were incubating the eggs, it basically, they were crushing their kids and killing their kids. And it wasn't just bald eagles. Most of our birds of prey, hawks, owls, ospreys, were really impacted by this. So DDT was banned in the early 50s, but unfortunately, it is still used in South America, because it gets its job done. Don't get me wrong, but unfortunately, we have found out it has a lot of environmental consequences.
Yeah, like many cases, the dose that kills or harms severely and the dose that works are very close. So we have to make that compromise between what's going to work and what's going to be toxic down the food chain. So just glad to see the bald eagles are back. And again, a national bird, not much we can say. If you see one, you just realize how beautiful they are, and you just learn to respect them. And that's the most important. And that's what you teach, James, is respect our wildlife. You know, look at it. You know, they're animals you can pet, but in many cases, you know, they don't want to bother you. They're shy, but if you invade their turf, they will let you know.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Be pretty obvious. We are speaking with Mr. James Anderson, the official naturalist of WWGH Radio and Marion and Environs and the entire universe, as far as I'm concerned. Let's go ahead and just not discount the great thing that James and his staff of expert nature lovers, what they all do. Earlier in the month, James, as part of your Park District January 2023 program, on New Year's Day, you had the Audubon Killdeer Plains Christmas Bird Count. So how did that go?
Yeah, it went really well. We had about 10 participants. Some were from Marion County. We actually have quite a few from the Columbus region, a few from the Delaware County region. And kind of a recap of what it is, it's a citizen scientist project, and citizen scientist means that you don't have to have a PhD in biology or whatever. And it's, you're kind of required, most of these citizen scientist projects, to have some type of training. Sometimes it's very basic, sometimes it's very intense, just depending on what kind of research opportunity that you know that you're doing. But here in the United States, the Christmas Bird Count program has been happening over 100 years. Here in Marion County, I think it's about 52, 53 years. So what happens is we pick a date. It's usually about 3 weeks in the end of December, early January. We pick one day out of that time frame. And there's a 30-mile radius circle. We go and we count the birds. And then I have to give the data back to the Audubon Society. And then they will regurgitate it back to me and say, hey, what's going on with your local bird population? You know, unfortunately, a lot of our species are declining, you know, habitat loss, you know, climate change. There's a lot of different factors. But it's just showing data that, you know, hey, what is going on with in the bird world?
So, again, just because it is cold outside and might be snowy does not mean that there are exciting things going on with the park district. As I've said, you don't hibernate. Not for winter or any other time, unless a lot of snow or like earlier this week, just a lot of slushy conditions, not really conducive to walking. Things go on. Also, earlier in January, James, you had the polar hike from 1 to 4 p.m. on the 14th. It was a come-as-you-please hike. You can hike at your own pace as far as you would like and then stop in the Nature Center for refreshments. So how did that go with your fellow hikers?
Yeah, it went really well. We had about 25 people. 8 people came out for the guided nature tour. But our park board member, Janine Williams, she made a lot of delicious refreshments. And then something new that we added, TJ Downey, he's a local here in Marion. And he goes along the Marion Tallgrass Trail and collects sticks that are just falling on the trail. Then he takes them home. He sands them down, and then he puts a preservative coating on them. Then he puts a washer nut at the end of the stick, so as you're walking, it can get a grasp into the ground, so it keeps you more stable. And then he burnt a stamp on top of it, so it's Marion County Park District. So we gave out quite a few. We still got quite a few left for our Sweetheart Hike coming up here in the next couple of weeks, and then we hopefully will have enough for our Shamrock Hike, which will be happening in March. So it's part of our winter hike series that we've done for the last few years with the park district.
Adam here on The Talking Place, WWGH, speaking with James Anderson from the Marion County Park District about all the exciting things going on during these sometimes cold winter months in Marion and the surrounding area. Now, James, you mentioned the Sweetheart Hike. And of course, February, people start thinking about spring, especially with some of the previews of spring that we've been encountering. Before we get into the programs for February and later in 2023, this time of the year, as you know, people have groundhog fever. Between Punxsutawney Phil and Buckeye Chuck and Dunkirk Dave from my days in upstate New York, Charlie Evers, the late great, and his creation of Buckeye Chuck, as it used to go by Chuck Evers, so the groundhog was named after him. The big Groundhog Day extravaganza occurring at the station on the 2nd of February. People are going gaga over groundhogs, James. And what's up with that? What's your take? Are you a groundhog guru? Are you a groundhog? Are you a groundhog freak, so to speak, or do you think it's a little overblown?
You know, that was a good question. It's funny, other than Buckeye Chuck, we actually use a lot of different animals for the whole forecasting thing for winter. Down in Buckeye Lake, they use Benny the Bass, and up in Vermilion, Ohio, at Lake Erie, in October, they use the Woolly Bear Caterpillars for the Woolly Bear Caterpillar Festival. So it's just interesting on how we use these animals as our indicators of, hey, what's going to go on with the weather. So, I mean, there is a little evidence of it, but it's, you know, you kind of mentioned before, you know, it's just, we've had a very interesting winter. You know, we've had from the 60s to, you know, below zero. So we've kind of been all over the place this winter. So of course, I'm always rooting. I would love for Buckeye Chuck to predict a warm spring around the corner. I mean, I think we all would. I think a lot of us are tired of seeing the snow and ice. But I know there are some people who do really love the winter season. But yeah, I'm always rooting for him to see a shadow.
So going gaga over groundhogs, I think we'll adopt that as an official Adam-ism. Do you kind of see Groundhog Day, James, kind of like the Zodiac? I think it might have some accuracy, and I do stress some, but I wouldn't, you know, live my life by it. I mean, if the groundhog or whatever animal we choose to use sees his or her shadow and then it gets scared and there's 6 more weeks of winter, is that really accurate, or should we just laugh at it, think of it as harmless fun, and let our experts like Jim Ganahl forecast the weather for us?
Well, yeah, I would definitely say, like, Jim Ganahl definitely has a lot more better evidence of, hey, what's going to go on with the winter. But, you know, this tradition has been happening for a very long time, not just in the United States. I mean, we do have some European roots. You know, did start in Germany, and even the Romans used Candlemas, you know, on how the candle flame was lit, and or how the shadow would go. They would use to help predict, hey, what's going on with their winter and spring. So it is interesting on how we use these things to say, hey, what's going to go on with the weather.
Now, it seems like the famous groundhogs, you know, think of Dunkirk Dave, since I used to live again in upstate New York, Punxsutawney Phil and Buckeye Chuck, it's all kind of in the, you know, northeastern and midwestern part of the country. But, of course, that's where the weather has its four seasons versus San Diego or Miami, where it's pretty much summer every day. That would be true, that the Groundhog Day is more of an event for this part of the country. People in San Diego laugh at it and go about their day and go swimming on the 2nd of February.
Yeah.
So it's unique, I think, to this part of the country, which is good. You know, we have something to be famous about. People, you know, certainly, there's no secret. Some people think Ohio is kind of boring. Some people confuse Ohio with Iowa or Idaho. Anybody who does that, James, has not been here. In Marion also. Again, if you think Ohio's boring, Marion's boring, you've not been here. So don't knock it till you try it. And this
That's
is
right.
One more thing that we can be proud of. In terms of the groundhog, James, is that an animal we see in our travels in Ohio, or do we have to, you know, put one on a Greyhound bus and bring him or her to Marion? Is this an endangered animal? And I mean, is this, you know, when you're going to see every day, like a squirrel or a housefly or a possum?
So these guys are very, very abundant throughout the entire state of Ohio. They're actually considered a nuisance species because they're just so, so abundant. And actually, groundhog, wild boar, and coyote are one of the three species of animals in Ohio which have what's called a no-close season. So that means you can hunt them any time of the year versus most of the other game species that we're allowed to hunt have a what's called a season. So that means you can only hunt them in a particular time. But if you're so abundant and so crazy, like coyotes and groundhogs and wild boar, that's one way to help control the population. But it's kind of funny, you know, Ohio was mostly forested and before in pre-settlement times. So there weren't actually a lot of groundhogs in the state of Ohio. Yes, there probably were some in Marion County in pre-settlement times since we were a prairie region, because that's where groundhogs prefer. They like open prairie spots. But then as settlers were coming in, opening the land, destroying the forest to create development, farmland, it kind of deterred the forest species away, but open land species like groundhog and quail and foxes actually really thrived in those conditions. So when that happened, groundhogs just became very, very abundant throughout the entire state of Ohio. Now, obviously, we're not going to see groundhogs right now since they are hibernating, but about late February to about mid-March, a lot of them are going to start coming out. And then once it really starts warming up towards the end of March, most of them are already out. The first ones that typically come out are the males. And what he does is, as he's out, he's creating a mental map of where all the hibernating females are. He's not going to breed with them, but what he'll do is he'll say, okay, I know a female's there, a female's there. Oh, a male's over there. I want him for that. Because once everybody comes out of hibernation in mid to late March, he has that map in the back of his mind, and he knows where to go. So it kind of is really smart because it really avoids him from being out in the open where predation is very vulnerable to him because, you know, there's hawks, there's eagles, there's coyotes, there's foxes, bobcats. There's a lot of things that do prey upon the groundhog. So having that mental map in the back of their mind, again, he knows where to go. He doesn't stop. He's not constantly looking. He knows where to places to avoid, you know, with those males, so he doesn't want to compete against them because, you know, they don't want to get injured during the mating season. Their goal is to mate and don't get hurt. But then after everybody's hibernating, after everybody's done breeding, then they all kind of disperse, and then they're out for the entire spring, summer, and early fall.
So they have their own kind of mating ritual, their own groundhog singles bar.
Yeah.
Not quite the same as a human singles bar. You don't sit down next to a pretty lady and offer to buy her a drink or go dancing. They just have their own little way of doing things.
Yeah.
Kind of fascinating. So people, groundhogs aren't that big. I mean, do people hunt them? Are they a good animal for hunting?
Most of the time people are hunting groundhogs because they're a nuisance species. Especially farmers don't like them because they can cause a lot of problems with farmers for two reasons. One reason is their holes, their burrows. You know, groundhogs make multiple holes because they need multiple ways to get in and out of the burrow system. Well, if you've got a cow or a horse, especially horses, if they're running through, they get their leg caught in the hole, and then they can twist it and, you know, could kill the animal or seriously injure those livestock animals. Also, too, creating that burrow system, and if you're not familiar, burrows is basically an underground home, underground tunnel system. Well, when they make a very extensive burrowing system, actually makes that topsoil, so the soil that we're walking on, very loose. Now, we're not very heavy, so it's fine, but when you got farmers coming with tractors and combines and very heavy farm equipment, they basically fall into these giant craters, and there have been reports of farmers getting seriously injured and dying because of this. So a lot of times farmers will, you know, they want people, or sometimes they will go out and just kill as many groundhogs as you want. I have ate groundhog before, I will admit. It does taste like a porky flavor. I've had it in chili before. So it is an interesting taste, I will admit. So.
Did you hunt the groundhog yourself, or can you buy it at Kroger?
I did. Okay. I did. Yeah, my friends and I in high school, we'd use 22s, and yeah, we would go out groundhog hunting.
I've never seen groundhog at Kroger. Can you buy it at like a specialty grocery store? You got to kind of
No.
Get it yourself.
Unfortunately, wild game, unless it's raised in a farm, I don't think you can legally sell it. Any wild game at a store or what.
But you did eat groundhog and obviously lived to tell about it. And it tastes kind of like pig, so it wasn't too bad. And since you and your friends caught it yourself, can't beat the price. No charge. You get a lot of meat out of a groundhog. They're kind of chubby, right? So they are kind of versus a thinner animal like a squirrel.
So it depends. If you can get them in March when they're right out of hibernation, I will admit they're very fatty because they still have all that fat on them from hibernation. So they'll be a little bit more gristly. But during the summertime, as long as it's a younger animal, I mean, yeah, they're pretty tender. We've shot some older groundhogs before, and the meat's very tough. So obviously age is going to affect that.
But they are edible, so friends out there.
Yep, they are edible.
If the groundhogs are not getting along with the horses or anyone else on the farm and you have a 22 handy, you are legally able to hunt it and put it on the Barbie, as they say in Australia.
Yeah.
And it doesn't taste too bad, but you can't buy it at Kroger because it's a wild game.
Yeah.
Now, squirrels are rodents, which I know because I know Dear Abby talked about that. And they're kind of thought of a bit like rats. You know, they're sort of cute, but they're destructive and they're everywhere. What kind of an animal is a groundhog? I don't think it's a rodent, but I might be wrong. So where does it sit kind of in that animal classification?
It is actually a rodent. They're actually the largest one in the squirrel family because, yes, they do climb trees to escape from danger or to find food. They are related to little squirrely friends. But most of their life is, they do like to burrow underneath the ground. That's where they get their name, groundhog. A few other names they go by is woodchuck, whistlepig, land beaver, and my favorite is mouse bears, because Native Americans used to call them that, because what bears and groundhogs have in common is they stand on their hind legs to look around to find threats, and I think that's how the Native Americans kind of saw and kind of compare them of, you know, how bears and groundhogs act, and then a color of a mouse. So I always think mouse bear is a really interesting name.
So woodchuck and a groundhog, that's the same thing?
Same thing.
I thought they were slightly different. I wasn't sure. Yep. Kind of like a frog and a toad. It's like, are they the same thing? Is there kind of a gray area? And they are rodents.
I mean, they're closely related, but they are different.
Yeah, which is been part of the fascinating nature of your job. So they are rodents, so they're related to mice and rats and those animals we don't like to talk about. But they are bigger, so it isn't totally clear what they are. And something that often comes up is the possum is the only native marsupial, I believe. I might be wrong.
Yes,
so,
you
kind of put them in the same category. Because, I mean, they are similar in appearance a little bit. They're very different.
They do.
But very different biologically.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of interesting. It's almost like we look at chimps and gorillas as being biologically very similar to humans, which they are. So, you know, they're the primates.
Yeah.
Whereas groundhogs, to me, and mice, they don't really seem that similar. Even a groundhog and a squirrel are sort of different. And I thought the squirrel was kind of like the biggest rodent around, but you learn something new every day.
It's the beaver. The beaver is the largest rodent in North America. They can get up to 100 pounds.
Good 100 pounds. I didn't know they were that big. Rodents really do run the gamut from being almost as heavy as a person to a tiny little mouse. Just part of the fascinating world of wildlife that we have in this great state. Of course, as my mom always said, James, time flies when you're having fun, but I figured we would cover the going gaga over groundhog thing because Scott's talking a lot about it on his show, and people are just very excited for this Groundhog Day event with Mary Ellen Withrow and all the other people who are a lot more important than I am. In the few minutes remaining, James, tell us about the things going on in February with the Park District and what people should mark their calendar for.
All right. So, on February 2nd, we'll be at the Groundhog Day event. At the radio station, I think at 7:40 is when Buckeye Chuck is going to give his prediction. So,
well, if you don't know the time, just listen to Scott's show because every 5 minutes they talk about it. It's in that early evening time frame.
Yes. We have our Sweetheart Hike on the 11th from 1 to 4. Guided Nature Tour starts at 1:30. That will be at Marion Tallgrass Trail. And then on the 15th, we're having a spectacular cardinal program at 5 o'clock p.m. at Marion Tallgrass Trail. So we're going to talk about the lovely cardinal bird because it's their breeding season, so they will be very active along the trail. See a lot of cardinals out. Then on the 23rd, we have the Owl Prowl at the Trail program starting at 5 o'clock p.m. It's also the owl breeding season, so owls are usually very vocal at this time, so we'll have a great chance of seeing one up close. We did last year at our Owl Prowl program. Just please note that the programs can be canceled due to weather or other circumstances. Programs do start 5 minutes after the starting time, but please keep up to date on our social media, our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter account, and that's how you can keep up to date when things are going on or cancellations.
And lots of exciting stuff certainly on the agenda as we welcome spring in just a few weeks from now, and maybe Buckeye Chuck will portend the arrival, I think that's the right way to say it, of an early spring, and we can start getting our swimsuits ready maybe after St. Patrick's Day. Who knows? You know, just turn around if you don't like the weather in central Ohio. It might change and might even see 3 or 4 seasons in the course of 1 week. But
that's all
part of the fun, I think. Well, James, it's been a great pleasure having you with us. With a couple minutes left, I talked a little bit earlier about trees budding and, you know, leaves forming. When is the first tree that's going to bud and form the beginning of leaves as we start getting a little anxious for the beginning of maybe an early spring?
It's our state tree.
The buckeyes
are the first ones to produce leaves,
but not the last ones to win a football game, are they?
No.
So the trees are on a different time frame than the Ohio State football team, but the Bengals are doing pretty good. Maybe we need to make some changes.
There you go.
Make the Bengal the official animal of Ohio. I guess want to keep a Bengal in the zoo because they are cute, but don't really want to get too close to them. But maybe with the way the Bengals are doing, maybe they should be become our national, our statewide animal. Or, you know, Joe Burrow, I guess, interestingly enough, you said Groundhog's Burrow. So maybe there's some truth in that, because he would be associated with our, with Buckeye Chuck and all of the other groundhogs that, for some reason, some people think are more accurate than people who've gone to college and maybe have a PhD in meteorology. But who knows, sometimes maybe Mother Nature is telling us something, that the old-fashioned method of a groundhog seeing or not seeing his or her shadow might be a good way to predict things. But we do remind people, James, with spring and summer coming up, a lot of exciting stuff is on the agenda for the Park District. And tell us quickly, how do people follow you on Facebook and social media? And be sure to like the page and follow it, because sometimes you might be surprised by all the things that are going to be going on.
Yeah, so we have two Facebook pages, the Marion Tallgrass Trail and the Marion County Park District page. Instagram, I think if you either put Marion Tallgrass Trail or Marion Park District, it should come up, and same with Twitter. So that on our social media, that's the best way. And also to our YouTube channel, we don't advertise our programs, but we do have a lot of fun educational material. Just type in Marion County Park District and make sure to subscribe to that, and you can watch all the fun little quirky videos I make, from natural lessons to reading in nature and just stuff like that. So.
Good programs, good knowledge, and every time you listen to a program on this station, folks, you come away a little smarter than you were when you began. For example, I didn't know that groundhogs were rodents. I wasn't quite sure, but logically, since possums are marsupials, you never quite know. Just because animals may seem similar or not so similar doesn't mean they're not related or related. So next time you see a groundhog, which is the same as a woodchuck, in case you see one of those, remember, he or she is a cousin to your friendly neighborhood mouse. And be that as it may. And again, bottom line, folks, appreciate our flora and fauna that we share this great world with. And I think here with our four-season climate and just the terrain, we have some of the best variety of plants and wild animals of anywhere in this great country. And folks, if you do want to learn more about it, again, we encourage you to partake in these programs put on by James and all the fine people at the Marion County Park District. As we mentioned, view their social media for details and schedules and FAQs. James Anderson, thank you very much for being with me here on The Talking Place. We will likely talk to you as we get ready to welcome the beginning of spring. Goodness sakes, late February. That should be quite exciting. And we'll also see at that point if Buckeye Chuck is as accurate as Jim Ganahl and all of our TV weather people. So we appreciate anybody would like to email me with any questions that you may want to ask James on our next program. Feel free to send me a correspondence at adam@wwgh1071.com. Adam here, thanking you folks for joining us, and have a great day.